Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2002 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com. This week, Sophie Sweetman. She's on the Source FM down in Cornwall. She's on to talk about the Skripal affair in Salisbury and a strange message that popped up for her on Facebook. Also, the 5G. Well, you've heard of 3G, 4G, but 5G is apparently a big step up. This is a kind of microwave prison grid being constructed around us, including on the tops of lampposts. Mark's got some real worries about it, and he happens to know a lot about the technology involved. He's pointing us towards looking at something called the Environmental Health Trust online, if you want to find out anything, because the mainstream press is not investigating this technology at all. It's called the Internet of Things. The idea is everything is going to be being connected. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft on Jamaica Street. I'll give you our contact details at the end of the show.
My name's Sophie Sweetman. I'm a journalist. I live in Cornwall. I've been a journalist probably since, 1998, with other writing work involved as well. I moved down here to do an MA in writing. And what I take interest in is how reporting is done and the changes in journalism over time. And there does seem to be an ongoing trends towards kind of lazy journalism, but every so often there's some exceptional work going on.
Okay, well, let's just talk about the case itself. What is it that what is it that you would like to point to in the way it's been, not necessarily the way it's been reported, but the facts of the case, of the story, of the poisoning?
Well, I first noticed it when it happened on the 4th of March, and then I followed the news on it on the 8th of March, and the initial thoughts were that the UK were basically automatically saying it was done by Putin, it was coming from Moscow, why this had happened, whereas the Russian foreign minister was kind of saying the English press, the Western press, are just going to use it to raise anti-Russian feeling, and that they're going to trot out all the same markings of the news story, like they've done it with other things. And more recently, they've come up with a theory that the daughter, Sergei Skripal's daughter, had just been to Moscow, and that the nerve agent had been somehow gotten into her suitcase without her knowing, brought back to Salisbury, and then when she opened it at home, it had escaped. And that it had taken effect when they were sitting in the park bench. Meanwhile, there are other reports of a lady with a red suitcase disappearing up the alleyway between the pretzel and the shop. So it was kind of not really very focused in its attempts to find who had actually done it and why. And on the 8th of March, my first thoughts, which seems to be similar to thoughts that have come out, maybe that have been within the realms of possibility that Jeremy Corbyn was trying to say that it could have been more like a gangster, a Russian gangster. And that means it could be someone already within the UK. If Sergei Skripal had been retired for 8 years, he'd come back, he'd been brought back in exchange in a spy swap for one of Russia's key spies who they got back. So Sergei Skripal, who might have been executed in Russia as a traitor, because he was informing for MI16, came back to the UK, and he'd been living in Salisbury with his family for 8 years. And
he was sentenced over in Russia, I think, to 12 years in prison. I mean, he wasn't executed, even though he had betrayed his country as a spy. Often they are, you know, but they decided to stick him in jail for 12 years, and then he was swapped.
In 2010, yes, so you've swapped. So there must have been people that he must have got caught because he'd informed on their identity to MI6. So there must be, there could be, my first thought on the 8th of March was it could be a personal grudge. Why are we automatically deciding it's a political thing? I mean, Russia have just had their presidential election last Sunday on the 16th. And I spoke to someone in Russia who said that they'd listened to all the speeches and they'd gone and exercised their, you know, democratic rights. Didn't really say any more than that. But obviously, when I heard on, when I looked it up on the news, because I didn't even know they were having an election until a Russian person in Russia told me. And I just sort of noticed that they've kind of had a one horse race, really. The other, the main opposition had been disqualified. So that isn't something that in all the press has been presented to the British public. We are not given all the facts. They're not looking at how it could have been done, not looking at all the different players who could have done it. They're not looking at all the motivation factors behind it.
Well, I mean, and in a way, that's become this story. I mean, I know there's lots of different anomalies in the tale itself. It's almost become the story, the, you know, the lack of questioning by the British press. I mean, do you think you've perceived a change in the way that journalists and journalism operates in Britain?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, there was a really good white paper done by the London School of Economics about bias in the run-up to the election and about, you know, mentions of the Conservatives and, you know, how many times. But it did say, that the press has become a guard dog for the establishment instead of being a watchdog, watching the establishment to inform the public. I mean, we've just had a lot of that, but it's not necessarily a recent change. I noticed this was happening when the Maastricht Treaty was in the press in 1991, and my mother was shaking the newspaper in anger, going, why can't you tell me what this is about? Why is this so complicated? And then shortly after that, you had Black Wednesday, when sterling fell through the exchange rate mechanism, and then George Soros's head cropped up, and all sorts of things just seem to happen, which we don't really get to hear much about.
So, I mean,
people in Russia don't.
I mean, do you think then, I mean, I certainly would look at this as a story which is saying almost as much about the press's inability to think critically, to report a story critically of the establishment, as it is about actually reporting the story.
Well, it might be that they just can't afford it, because obviously newspaper advertising is right down. And can they afford to have to pay investigative journalists to go out there? And if they can't, does that mean that people who have the proper journalistic skills, who are going to be objective and impartial and go out there and look, you know, are we going to be able to find the information? And are people going to be able to, you know, like, withstand through campaigns the way George Monbiot does, you know, like the environment and, you know, like just about society and, you know, well-being and things like that.
But hang on, because we've got social media, haven't we? We've got places to share this, Twitter, Facebook, things like that.
I'm just not sure that they're impartial enough. Again, I think there's much lack of impartiality. There's too much bias. It's losing people's trust.
I mean, surely, so look, hang on, Sophie, because you can't really, surely on Facebook, you can't have bias. I mean, you post something, you say what you want to say on there, and that's just what you say.
Yeah, well, it ought to be like that. But ever so often you get this passive-aggressive little, you know, like notification from Facebook with the two little hands pointing down, saying something which seems incredibly lovely and as if it's trying to protect you. But in fact, it's actually kind of telling you to watch yourself.
So I mean, have you had any of these sorts of things on phone? Do you use Facebook yourself?
Yep. Yeah, I had a community standards one. Just basically saying we're working extremely hard to keep you safe. And if it's reported, then basically there are certain posts, you know, that can't be shared. Just when I literally just quoted the news and put, this is what the British are saying and this is what the Russians are saying. I didn't even make any aspersions myself. I just posted the article and said, what's going on?
I mean, surely that's normal. I mean, surely somebody might just Oh, right. So I was just going to say there, someone had complained about it, and therefore,
Facebook. If someone did complain,
but they hadn't had a chance to. They hadn't had a chance to complain. So Facebook had automatically complained for itself. I mean, that's amazing. What article was it exactly that you posted, and what from what publication?
It was the BBC, 8th of March, just the news story, the main news story about the Skripal thing that day.
And so did you post something with it, saying something rude, or I don't agree with this, or this is fake news, or something like that?
No, I just copied and pasted from the article. I said, this is what the British are saying, pointing the finger at Russia. This is what Russia is saying. Oh, how predictable. The Western press are just going to make this an anti-Russian thing.
Amazing.
That was it. Yeah.
So did you, you know, question Facebook on this? Or I mean, it's difficult to find
you
probably anyone
to
talk to.
You can't. You can't. They're unaccountable. They're not accountable for
this
their
is
actions.
A one-way message, folks. It's not. They're not interested in it, whether you think it was appropriate or not. Okay, so that they were saying that you're in danger of violating our community standards by posting a BBC article. This is pretty shocking. I wonder whether the social media is in danger of becoming almost as blinkered as the corporate London media.
Well, it's this kind of thing. It's this, like the LSE. There's a great article on bias. It's this thing. It's saying about being a guard dog for the establishment rather than a watchdog watching the establishment and making sure it's doing what it should be doing and not letting us go to, you know, war with Russia. Yeah, not endangering our safety.
Yeah, actually, you know,
are
you're
they
right.
Protecting our safety?
In a way.
Or are they endangering us?
I mean, in a way, in two ways here. I mean, potentially this kind of pliable mainstream corporate media is a threat to national security.
Well, I just think the lack of thoughts, the lack of people sitting down and thinking, you know, like when there were the attacks last year, like the Westminster attack, they ploughed straight in and they basically said it was this guy who turned out that he was in prison and he couldn't have been there. I mean, just jumping so far ahead of the gun, which is what Jeremy Corbyn was trying to say in Parliament. And then the BBC basically puts, a picture of Jeremy Corbyn with his peak, the peak of his cap, which could have been like a fisherman's cap, worker's cap, just basically changed it, made it higher and removed the peak and set him against a Kremlin backdrop. To kind of sort of make out he was some kind of Russian sympathizer or some kind of commie person. And there is a very, I just don't like generally in American films and in a lot of things, there's this kind of absolutely unreal, unfathomable terror of the left. I think that all kinds of social and economic and political systems need to be considered. Again, that's back to lack of thought. No one's sitting down and thinking about anything.
Okay, Sophie, you know, just tell us about your programme that you do on the radio down there in Cornwall.
Well, Source FM is a community radio station. It has quite a lot of people who do shows, all sorts of cross-section of society of people who live around Falmouth and Penryn. And I do a show on Friday from 2 to 3:30 p.m. And it's mostly focused on new music and emerging artists, new songwriting, not covers. And I interview people and I get sent music, which I play if I like the song.
Sounds like you've got a bit of a political tint to what you do. And I'd like to just sum up what you were saying about the dangers of having a supine press in London, you know, the newspapers, the BBC and all that, with a quote from Edmund Burke. He was Edmund Burke. He's the former Bristol MP, not Bristol MP anymore. And he said, all that's necessary for the triumph of evil is good men do nothing. And I can't help but think that this is one of the things that when a journalist is just simply copying what some official government statement has said, or interviewing some spokesperson without actually asking any serious questions that they put some thought into, that actually that's what they're doing. Can we find you online? Can we listen online up here in Bristol Sophie?
Yeah, it's www.thesourcefm.co.uk/listen. And source is like the beginning of everything, not the tomato you put on your chicken.
And you got your own website too, haven't you? Give us that too.
I've got a Facebook page, Sophie's Springboard Show, and I put up my playlists at about 1 o'clock on a Friday.
Okay, Sophie Sweetman, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more. We'll be right back.
My name's Mark Steele, and I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Revue. We're a head-up display systems incubator business. We develop products with head-up display systems, and I came to 5G basically by accident. And how it actually all came about, we developed this sophisticated optical waveguide, and it was actually designed in a way to mitigate the optical radiation hazard risk. Because obviously optical radiation is a known carcinogen and a known hazard. And in the design of the product, we had to mitigate that particular risk, because obviously what you don't want to do is produce products that hurt people.
Okay, so tell us a bit more about this product that you're developing. A head-up display, as I understand it, is a sort of thing used by fighter pilots, so they can look out of the window and they see a sheet of glass with some digital information projected onto it. So they don't have to actually even look down at the controls. They can look out of the aircraft at the same time as seeing kind of what usually green lines, which will give them information about altitude, that sort of thing, with aircraft. It's also something which is used by our Bristol Mayor, actually, Marvin Rees. When he's doing his speeches, he looks at pieces of glass on both sides of him, which have got his speech written there, and it looks as if he's just turning his head, where actually he's reading, you know, a pre-prepared script. Anyhow, just to explain how we get from you developing these head-up displays to discovering this whole 5G phenomena.
Yeah, well, we're interested in full spectrum light. And obviously, that's the holy grail, let's say. And obviously,
why is that?
Well, full spectrum lights, it carries with it a significant number of issues, namely higher frequency waveforms. So let's say a blue part of the blue spectrum at 450 nanometers is very, very energetic and extremely problematic, and especially if I was to shine it in your eye. It's the reason why you mentioned before about the green overlay, the green imagery in a head-up display system. Normal head-up display systems are green. That's the 560 nanometers. It's less biologically hazardous to the user. And it's not just because the military like green, they do. They actually have to have it in green because it's less biologically damaging. It has got issues, but it's not as biologically damaging as either full spectrum.
I mean, we're often warned, aren't we, that sunlight can be dangerous. I mean, you know, you've got to wear sunglasses. You mustn't look directly at the sun. So this is nothing new, really, because we know, anyone actually sits and thinks about it, how dangerous sunlight is.
Well, there's not exactly. And the military have known for a number of years that the architecture that they use in weapon sights is 560 nanometers, and they only use them momentarily, by the way. But some of the fighter pilots do have them on a little bit further, a little bit longer. But you have to remember, in head-up display systems and a lot of the planes and jet fighters, you've actually got quite a bit of distance from the screen, and that allows attenuation of the optical radiation.
Okay, so how do we get from these head-up displays to the 5G, which is basically something on your phone? It's just a new kind of thing, which is going to be, rather than 4G, it's going to be 5G. It goes on the microwave mask system, and it's data. And one thing I would just add is that everyone realises that the idea of using data on the mobile microwave mast system, it was originally developed by the military for military communications.
All of this equipment's for battlefield interrogation and for data gathering and for communication systems, all developed by the military. It's basically battlefield equipment. So
This is being rolled out for the public right across the West.
And unfortunately, going back to the story about the head-up display systems, we came under a sustained industrial espionage attack by one of the major technology companies from the USA. And
who was that? I can't say yet
because obviously there's a legal case going on, and obviously that's slightly confidential at the moment. And this attack was severe. We had websites taken. We had information stolen. In fact, the attack became so prominent, we actually taken quite a lot of evidence over the period. And We're pretty sure about who it was. In fact, we'll have the evidence to show exactly who it was. And obviously that's with our lawyers at the moment, this antitrust case that will, no doubt you'll hear about it in the future, but it is a bit confidential at the moment. So I can't exactly tell you.
But that all relates to the 5G, does it?
It all relates to 5G, because what actually happened, this particular company had a head-up display system where they were projecting full-spectrum optical radiation directed into a person's eye. Now, I was pretty surprised about that because optical radiation is a known hazard, and the system was actually basically a projector that focused the optical radiation directly on the retina, so it's a retinal display. Now, in a weapon sight system, you'd use a 560 nanometers due to what we talked about before. It's less biologically active and most certainly less damaging. So I was pretty surprised, and I thought these guys had come up with something extremely genius. However, after talking to people who'd actually tried these particular types of products, we found that people were getting very sore eyes.
Okay, so what sort of weapon sights are we talking about? Are these gun sights? What kind of
sights? Well, gun sights, all gun sights, weapon sights, all green. You know, the military, like I said, have known for a number of years that within this 560 nanometers wave frequency, there's less biologically damage, and there's science to substantiate this particular issue. And that led me to think, well, why would a technology company, they've got to have the expertise. Why would they actually develop a product like this? And then I spoke to a chap in America, a guy called Martin Blank, a professor at a university in the USA, who'd actually done an assessment of this particular product, where the antenna was actually strapped to your head. Now, you'll know your mobile phone. If I put your smartphone directly up against your head, it'll fail the current FCC regulatory standards for the amount of radiation, the SAR value of radiation that you can be exposed to. And this particular piece of equipment actually had the antenna strapped to the user's head. And this chap from the University in the USA, Mark Blank, he did an article about the radiation, and I contacted Martin and said, well, hang on a minute, because I'll tell you what's a little bit more energetic in the electromagnetic radiation spectrum is light frequency. So pouring optical radiation directly into someone's eye is a lot more risky than actually strapping an antenna to someone's head, all of which would fail the test. And, you know, any product development, my background's in oil and gas. I've been in research and development all my adult life. And what we're always very, very careful of is new product developments and risk assessments. And whenever you do any product development, you always check against current regulatory standards. What you most certainly don't want to do, as we've seen and history keeps repeating itself, Piper Alpha, the Gulf of Mexico, where, you know, things go wrong. What we have to do, we've got to mitigate that risk by doing a significant amount of background research and analysis and actually use current standards before you would actually bring a product to market. There's nothing clever about bringing products to market that hurt people. And I was more than concerned. I was appalled at this technology. And that's then led me to look a little bit further down the electromagnetic radiation spectrum in the microwaves.
I mean, are you saying that the 5G was being used in this antenna on someone's head?
No. It was a basic antenna that you would, and the FCC standards for the current regulatory standards for mobile phones, you do not have to, if you put that your mobile device up against your head, it will most probably fail the standard. In the phone manufacturer will tell you to keep that phone, at least I think it's got to be about 10 millimeters away from your head, because radiation.
That's probably in the small print when you buy your phone.
It is in all the small print. You know, do not keep this up against your skin. I think in most of these mobile devices.
Okay, so where does 5G come into your story then?
Well, 5G is a really interesting story because obviously the 5G system, the neural network system. I don't know if you read the.
Can you explain what that means?
Well, I can text. There's a lot of confusion about what 5G is, and you said before about higher speed rates. 5G is just all about more. it's not just about increased data rates. That's what you get in the mainstream media narrative. 5G is more 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, and 5G. And when we get to 5G, where it becomes extremely problematic, we start talking about phased array neural networks. And phased array is actually takes all of those products, the antennas, the transmitters, because of the way that they operate and punch out the signal, which is faster and more powerful. If you got in between your mobile device and that wave beam, it's basically a weapon. And 5G was developed, phased array systems are weapon systems. They're for radar, they're for weapons. So it's pretty problematic that we'd roll out a technology in the UK and across the West that not only cannot be secured, because obviously the US military are now decentralizing their whole battlefield interrogation systems, etc., because they can't secure their systems. So it's pretty concerning that we're rolling out this centralizing system, this neural network that can tie into every single smart device in your home, increasing the radiation impact, which we now know as a class A cancer-causing radiation. So it increases that footprint and also increases the potential for sickness, neurological disorders. I always cite a guy, he's the leading expert in the world on microwave radiation. His name's Professor Martin L. Pal. I suggest everybody to look Martin Pal up.
What is that? Is that P-A-L, his surname?
P-A-L, yeah, Martin L. Pal. And you'll find him, he does a few lectures on YouTube. You'll find them extremely interesting. And Martin can show the mechanism of how non-ionizing pulsed radiation is a classified carcinogen. It's extremely hazardous. In fact, Martin did a paper in 2015 that shows the significant increases that we're seeing currently in the epidemiological data, where people are suffering, stroke, increase in neurological disorders. Bristol University just reported another death. I mean, they rolled out 5G a year and a bit ago. Very, very bad idea using experimental technologies on young students. They've had a significant increase in suicide, etc.
Well, some would say, hang on, because some would say that that's actually due to economic pressures, the increase in suicide and academic pressures.
Well, the academic pressures, if I was to tell you that I was going to pour a load of microwave radiation into your head so you would lose your ability to think, and obviously you're under the pressure of, you know, racking up all these debts, etc., and then you can't remember the page before you do your research, you can't remember what you've read, you'd be pretty stressed as well.
So what is the effect of, I mean, I suppose most people will think, well, 5G is just one small step up from 4G, and this is, no. There's no real difference between these various different stages.
It's a massive difference. Tony, the 5G is billions more small antennas at close proximity to people's homes. And it's a neural network. And not only that, it actually operates using what's called a phased array. That phased array system takes those products outside of that current working envelope. So you know where you get a transmitter over a distance, the radiation drops off significantly. I can actually target you with a phased array signal. And I know there's been information about out there. I mean, I wouldn't have said this normally. However, the 5G array system in South Korea, as reported in Bloomberg 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think somebody was telegraphing someone else about what it was really for. The South Koreans have been using it to attack pigs, wild boar in the jungle. Now,
Can you just explain what a phased array is?
A phased array, what actually happens with phased array, you've got a number of antennas and then you step the signal from the different antennas and that then increases the punch of the increase. It's pretty technical. You'd probably be better having a more of a understanding of antenna design. But 5G antenna design is all about phased array.
So are you saying that you can use the antennas to sort of focus the signal in a particular place rather than, you know, as a normal mobile phone signal, you would expect that you just get a sort of drop down in the signal as you move away from the antenna?
It's exactly. It can pick up on your phone. It can actually track you around the building. I can 3D map your home. The signal systems from 5G, I can actually 3D map your home. I can see you sleeping in your bed. I've got the pictures if you want to see them. And I can actually, well, I can point that beam directly at you. And believe us, it most certainly, 5G is potentially an inadvertent weapon. It most certainly is a weapon in the wrong hands. Now, we currently have, encryption issues. I know GCHQ might think that they can encrypt everything, but believe you me, the NSA's inner sanctum has been hacked. It's well documented.
Well, what you're implying is that this whole phased array system, the 5G system, could be hacked, possibly by China, by Russia, by GCHQ. They could actually take over these systems and use them.
GCHQ have already commented, Toby Wallen did an article in the Mail Online about smart meters and how smart meters could bring the whole of the critical infrastructure, the whole critical energy infrastructure, down. And that has been supported by GCHQ.
Yeah, fascinating. And also, I mean, we've got this whole thing of they call it the Internet of Things, don't they? With more and more things that we buy, not just our phones, not just our smart meters, being able to be accessed remotely via these kinds of 5G networks.
There is no security at all on the internet. It's a myth. It's actually illegal to have a fully encrypted system. You'd actually go to prison. So you've got this pseudo encryption that just about every wannabe terrorist organization, no doubt, they can get the tools on the internet. In fact, I'm sure there was a dump 7 on WikiLeaks about all of the encryption, the current systems and how you can actually hack and use them in a nefarious way. But also, any sophisticated intelligence agency around the world can use this system, and they can't attack the infrastructure of the UK. Most certainly that would have a problem what we currently have, but with 5G, it makes it a lot worse because you've got a centralised system.
Can I also suggest, Mark, that actually large corporations have got the same sort of resources to do that, to hack if they wish to? I mean, they're obviously, you've had the experience of what you believe is commercial espionage, but you effectively being hacked by a large company. Big corporations do want to know exactly what their competition is up to. Anybody that might possibly not be on their side, wish to deal with them, etc. They want to be in there potentially. But anyway, the other phrase you've used, which I'd like you to explain if you can, is the neural network. What's that?
Well, it's basically how a brain works. You've got all these synapses and all these neural networks. It's just a term for this interconnectivity. So you've got all your IoT systems. So if we just imagine you've got all your smart devices in your home, I've got my 5G antenna outside. It can attack. It can actually gather data on every single thing that you're using. So I know when you've actually taken your cheese out, your fridge out of your smart fridge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because this is the dystopian idea of IoT. IoT is going to be in everything, right? And
This is the Internet of Things.
Is the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
Well, smart cities. It's the whole smart city thing. I mean, what I cannot understand, I mean, they're chopping all the trees down in Sheffield. Amy's chopping all the trees down in Sheffield. The 17,500 that the people have just found out that they haven't taken out. That's because 5G signals don't do very well with trees or any other foliage. So consequently, they're pulling the trees down. Now, the Victorians put trees in cityscapes for specific reasons. It's for the environment. So now we've got covert sort of plans to chop down all trees that get in the way of 5G signals.
Amazing. You're talking about neural networks. I mean, that does imply use of some kind of artificial intelligence, doesn't it?
Well, I think the plan eventually is to have an AI system that can actually use, the 5G system, whether it wants to use it as a weapon or just a bit of data gathering, I'm not really sure. But, these issues are actually real today. What we're talking about is technology that has lost the people who are funding it. I mean, central government has put multi-millions of pounds into universities around the country to roll this technology out. They're not risk assessed. They don't understand the implications of them. Like I said before, Bristol University's got a problem with suicide. I'm pretty sure, because I did speak to Bristol University before they rolled it out. These experimental waveforms with no cause neurological disorders, we already have the epidemiological data. We had the science. The telecoms company said that the scientists were incorrect. What we're saying now is we've now got the epidemiological data to substantiate the scientific work. The increase, stroke increase in the USA in young women, and it's young women and children on the front line here, obviously due to body density. There's been a 38% increase in stroke in women in the USA, and in the same time period, and this from the same geolocations, there's been a 15% increase in men. That tells me that the difference is head size.
Okay, well, so what's the agenda here? Let's step back from all of this.
The agenda, I don't believe there is a real agenda. I think what happened, there's a paradigm shift in allowing technologies to come to the fore because of the people that are behind them. These large, like you said before, very, very powerful organizations where they've got vast amounts of resources and government backing. And what happens, it's about in data gathering. And obviously everybody was interested in that.
Okay, how can we find out if 5G is coming to our street, to our district?
We've already got 5G. We've got a 5G, a covert. It was rolled out. Gated Council told the people Gated that this was they didn't tell anybody about anything. I came across this. I had a neighbour knocked on the door and said, "Mark, they've put these LED streetlights in and I'm bleeding from the nose at night." And I said, "Hang on a minute." Well, I know that LED streetlights aren't going to cause nosebleeds, but what I do know causes nosebleeds, microwave radiation. I did notice this antenna, this very small 5-inch twig on the top of the LED streetlight, and I thought, well, I'm absolutely shocked. I mean, nobody's going to be stupid enough to put a telecoms transmitter on top of an LED streetlight, because my thoughts immediately were for wildlife, you know, small flying insects, moths, etc., which would be attracted to LED streetlight. And obviously, if you had any telecoms strapped to it, that would cause them a significant issue. So anyway, I popped off, went to work, came back with a meter. I measured this lady's bedroom. She had 1,200 millivolts in her bedroom, just about enough to cause nosebleeds, where it actually damages the blood in your nasal passages to a point where it causes increase in blood pressure, and the next minute, your nosebleeds.
So do you need one of these meters? Are they the only way you can find out if you've got these in your district? Is there a central place, maybe a website, which has got information about where these 5Gs are, where they're rolling out?
Well, the Gated Council ruled these out covertly and in secret, which is in breach of parliamentary laws. It's in breach of just about every European law and diktat on these particular types of transmitters. Already known carcinogen. We already know that they have an impact on the environment. So there's no impact. There was no environmental impact.
But how do people find out? That's what I'm trying to get to. I mean, you know, obviously our listeners aren't in Gateshead. They're all over the country and possibly other parts of the world. How do we find out?
Knock on your council's door, ask them what they're doing, ask them what the transmission systems are.
These things on top of LED?
Yep.
How can you tell an LED streetlight from an ordinary one? And should you then stand back from it and just have a look, maybe with a pair of binoculars to see if it's got a little spike on the top?
Don't use binoculars around LEDs. That would be really, really dangerous.
Okay, maybe in the daytime.
In the daytime, you'll see a large twig at the top. And not only that, ask your local authorities. What I want to know is why local authorities are rolling these out covertly and in secret without doing what they're supposed to do in this open democracy. They are supposed to do full public consultation on any of these big projects. This project in Gated, I believe, was over £18 million. They are obliged under UK parliamentary law, rules and local authority regulations to carry out a full public consultation.
Okay, so where do we go online to find out more about all this?
Professor Martin Pahl, Ollie Johansson, an eminent scientist from Scandinavia, Ollie Johansson's work, Environmental Health Trust in the USA, Professor Deborah Davis's work. There are lots of. There are 270 of the world's eminent scientists who are calling for a moratorium on 5G. And the reason for that is because the epidemiological data that's coming out from the 3G, 4G rollout is absolutely appalling. And consequently, you know, the leading scientists in the world are calling for a moratorium. You've never seen that in the mainstream media. Nobody's covering this particular story, unfortunately. However, the bodies are rising. You know, we've seen a total collapse in the gated area, small flying insects, totally annihilated. We don't have any. We've seen a total collapse in the small sparrow population. That's in less than 1 year. Well, it was September 2016 when this transmission system was installed where I live. And it wasn't until I started investigating to find out what was going on. Now, the fact that I've got a weapons systems background, I understood exactly what to look for. When I got the data back from the council, they were very, very evasive about the information until I sent an FOI. They've now become, now because I've actually worked out exactly what it is and I've went back to them to tell them it's 5G, etc., they're in total denial. We have a total block to democracy here in Gateshead.
Amazing. Anyway, that sounds like a freedom of information, Chris, is what's needed. But look, what would you say to people that say, hang on, Mark, you're just a Luddite?
A Luddite. No, I'm not. I'm a technologist. I believe in technology. I think technology has been fantastic for humanity. But what you can't do is make technologies that hurt people. And the long-term issues that we have going ahead, I mean, like smoking and cancer, right, it took nearly 30 years before we've seen an epidemic in the lung cancer rates. Non-ionizing radiation is very, very similar pattern. We're just starting to see the epidemic today, where we're seeing increases in neurological disorders. I mean, no one covers this. It's always something else that potentially causes it. In fact, I'll give you an example, and this is really interesting. We wrote to the UK government's organisation to ask them some information, because what we'd actually seen in our near locality at Gateshead was a total collapse in the bee population when these transmitters were fitted. Spoke to half a dozen beekeepers. Their bees had collapsed. So we contacted the regulatory bodies and the authority for government about bees. They came back and told us that they had research papers to show that telecoms, and they had actually done research to show that telecoms had not had any effect on bee populations. Now, we were really concerned about this because obviously there's lots of peer-reviewed research out there that shows that they most certainly do. So we asked, and I had to ask under an FOI to this particular body to ascertain, because what we're really interested in was seeing the research. They've now come back and told us they don't have any. So you tell me, why would a government agency turn around and tell a member of the public, right, that they had information to say that telecoms, these microwave radiation transmissions, do not affect small flying pollinators? And then they didn't actually have the research papers at hand. That, to me, basically says it for. In fact, if we really want to get ourselves excited, at the Gateshead Council, where I remonstrated with them about smaller bodied animals and insects being harmed by this 5G neural network system, Gateshead Council actually had a report from PHE, the head of dosimetry, that's Protection Health England, right? Where the head of dosimetry actually made a statement, said that my assumption, Mark Steele's assumption, that microwave radiation has a more deleterious effect on small flying insects and small-bodied animals is not based out in science, not based in science. Now, unfortunately for the head of the PHE, the head of dosimetry at PHE, my assumption is a scientific fact, right? It's the reason why a one-pound chicken, right, doesn't take as long to cook as a five-pound chicken. Now, that's quite an interesting for the head of dosimetry not to actually understand the basics of physics, because we all know, right, that that's not the case. In fact, my assumption, not assumption at all, it's a basic physical law. So that was another. So that's another institution, another government-paid institution, where they're misinforming the general public. I mean, unfortunately for these characters, I know more than what they do about the particular subject. In fact, I'm pretty surprised that any scientist would actually say something as outrageously unsubstantiated as that. But they did. And I mean, that's in the public domain. I mean, anybody can go and have a look at. There's a YouTube video up there, Mark Steele, Gateshead Council, Part 1, Councillor McElroy repeats this information from the head of PHE's Doar Cemetery. That is not substantiated in science at all. In fact, PHE rely on the IEEE, right, for as a more eminent body, and the IEEE state quite clearly that children, smaller bodied animals and insects, this microwave radiation has a more deleterious effect, which fits basically with the science. So there's something very, very untoward going on. And like the people in Sheffield don't understand that the reason why they're getting their trees chopped down is because they have an effect, a very, very bad effect on 5G signals. Some of the higher frequency signals will not pass through trees. They're affected by foliage. So your foliage and your trees are going to be chopped down so that we can live in a smart city.
Okay.
Well, I don't think that the British people, this country is a great country, and I do not believe that the secret covert rollout of this technology will go down very well when the people of the country realise that the trees that bring oxygen, clean up the environment, and have, you know, a habitat for a lot of the birds, etc., etc., they're going to be chopped down.
Well, I don't think the 5G people realised what they were doing when they took on a weapons expert. Anyway, thanks very much for thanks, Mark, very much for talking to us.
No problem at all, Tony.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. You can subscribe and listen the week before broadcast at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Sophie Sweetman from The Source FM down in Cornwall, talking about the Skripal affair, the nerve agent down in Salisbury, and Facebook's little message to her. Also, Mark Steele, you just heard, on the 5G microwave grid. And his tip is, look up the Environmental Health Trust on 5G. And we'll put links to these on our show page at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production catches on Bristol Community FM at 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. And anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street on 0117 909 6897. They're online at prsc.org.uk, and you can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the National Volunteering website. That's do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.